Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good morning. Welcome to Sawcast number 49. My name is John Stryker Meyer. I'll be your host today for Sawcast number 49. And as always, we first and foremost thank Jocko Willing Productions for making the Sawcast interviews possible. And so today we've been able to infringe upon the good graces of one of our all-time SOG legends, Lieutenant Colonel Dick Thompson has joined us. Because I knew you as Henry at Fubai, yeah. And over the years it's evolved to Dick. But anyways, today, Dick Thompson. Dick, welcome back to the show. Thank you for going out of your way to be here. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for letting me come back. This was fun talking to somebody from that did so many things with a long time ago. So,
oh, a couple of days ago, huh? Yeah. Indeed. So again, we're going to, for our viewing audience, if you haven't seen Sawcast number 48, we recommend that you go back to our first interview with Dick. And also Jocko Willing Productions had his Jocko interviews with 204, 205, 206, and 401 interviewing Dick. And we've talked about Captain An, a Vietnamese Kingbee pilot, and Jocko interviewed him at 259. And we're talking about SOG Codename Dynamite, Book 1, which Jocko's covered extensively. And today we're going to look a little bit at Book 2. Again, talking with Dick and some of his. And in the book, we have a quote from people who were impressed and have read it, the draft copies. And I have a quote here from Jocko Willink himself. Jocko said, quote, "When I watch a stupid action movie and some guy jumps off a helicopter skid into 150 feet high trees, I always think, that's BS. That'll never work. Apparently, I need to spend more time with Dick Thompson to know what works." And Jocko's going to be interviewing Dick later this year. And today, we're here to ask that question about this specific mission. And just to set the stage a little bit, Dick, you were back at CCN at the time. You had just returned from a series of missions that wore you out, and you were walking up to headquarters to get your R&R papers for a few days of rest and recuperation, which they had. And at CCN, we had the compound for headquarters was on the western side of our perimeter, and just past that was the helicopter pad. So you're going up to get your R&R papers. On the helicopter pad, there's a slick, and somebody yells, "Hey, Dick, come help us." Or back then, they would have called you Henry. "Henry, come help us put the ropes in. We got a team in trouble." So you went up took your gear off, set it down, jumped on the helicopter, you're tying down the rope, and the helicopter lifts off while you're still in it. You tell the helicopter pilot, I'm not supposed to be here, and your gear's on the ground. Take it from there. What?
Yeah, well, I told the crew chief, I said, you know, I'm not supposed to be on here.
Yeah.
But we're lifting off, and we're starting to fly. And he told the pilot that I said that, and he turned back to me, and he said, the pilot said, sorry about that. but we got to go.
Sorry about that?
Sorry about that, but we got to go. And the team in contact, you know. So I just, you know, settled back and you know, thought, well, my R&R is going to be delayed for a couple of hours. We'll fly out, see what's going on, drop the, you know, McGuire rigs down to the team that needs to be extracted and come back, and then I'll get off and grab my gear and continue on.
And so, what was the initial report? Was it a recon team or a leftover hatchet force still on the ground?
It was it started out with a recon team on the ground, and they had a medical situation. So they had called for an extraction. An H-34 went out to try to get the team out, lift out a team member or something, and apparently, obviously they crashed. At this point, we weren't sure if they'd been shot down or something else had happened,
right.
But the H-34 had crashed and burned, but there were a couple of survivors from that, they wanted us to, or the helicopter I was on, to come out with McGuire rigs to drop down and see if we could lift some people out through the jungle canopy that way. Another aircraft, the medevac, had left a few minutes before us, and was on its way out to try to help get some people out from that site too. So things were a little confusing as to what was really going on, how many people were having a problem. So I'm just sitting there riding along in the aircraft, and my mind just starts to run, and I start envisioning various scenarios about what might happen. And there was one scenario that just started playing over and over in my mind. It was kind of like, you know, watching a movie or something.
Yeah.
And what it was, the aircraft in front of us had been shot down also, and we're coming to get there, and we arrive on site, and I'm looking out of the helicopter, but it's kind of like a black hole. I couldn't see what I was looking at.
And you're just thinking this mentally.
Yeah, and it's just playing over and over in my mind, and I'm thinking about it. And I pulled the crew chief over and yelled in his ear that I keep having this funny vision, and I told him, I told him. I said, this is what happened. The aircraft in front of us gets shot down, and then, you know, this happens. And he just looks at me like, you're crazy. So I just sat back down. And a few minutes later, he leans over, pulls me over, and he says, it's happening. And I said, what's happening? He said, the vision you saw. The aircraft in front of us just went down.
No.
And, you know, so now we got another aircraft down, and we got a problem. We'll be there in a few minutes. So we get there. He gives me a heads up. It's just over this ridge. So if we went over the ridge, I could see smoke coming up out of the canopy where the first aircraft had went down and burned. I could see a big hole in the canopy where the aircraft in front of us had cut a hole as it, you know, fell through the canopy.
Whoa.
And so we fly over, and I can see the second aircraft that went down, and it was kind of head first down in a ravine. I could see down, you know, through the hole in the canopy. I could see it was there. So it was head down, fuel was spilling out, and I could see it appeared to me that all the crew was still in the aircraft. You know, but they were
being, that was a Huey, right?
Yeah, and they were being covered with fuel, and you know, we were receiving fire, and it, there were some NVA moving up the ridgeline toward that aircraft. So all they were going to have to do was hit it with a tracer or a spark or anything. And, you know, it, sure. it would go up. Everybody would be burned. So I told, you know, the crew chief to tell the pilot, you know, to go back around. And I would, you know, go down the McGuire rig rope and, you know, see if I could get them out. And he didn't want to do that at first because they were receiving fire. But finally I said, if I don't go down there, you guys are going to, your comrades are going to die. There's no other option right now. I have to go down there. So I threw the McGuire rig out. You know, it's a, had a sandbag on the end of it, so it's stretching the rope down.
Right.
So
and, a McGuire rig is like a swath of cloth.
Yeah, it's kind of a canvas with a little loop with that sandbag on the end of it. So it goes down, and it goes into the canopy just a little ways. So I thought, it's a brand new nylon rope. Nylon is very slick. And it will really burn you if you move it across your skin fast. But I thought, you know, I can grip it tight enough. I didn't have any gloves or anything.
Oh.
I can grip it tight enough. I'll go down, you know, it, the other end of the rope where the McGuire rig is inside the canopy. So
yeah.
when I get inside the canopy, I'll grab a limb.
Do your monkey thing.
And climb on down. And then I noticed that the crew chief had a M16, you know, kind of strapped to the wall.
And you without any weapon.
Yeah, I didn't have anything. I mean, nothing. I had on a pair of jungle boots and you know, fatigues, and that was all I had. So he let me have his weapon. I threw it over my shoulder, and he had a...
the cloth bandolier.
A little bandolier. So I started out with 5 magazines, and, you know, one was in the weapon. I stepped out on the skid. And, you know, we're still receiving fire. We're receiving fire. So I realized that once I grabbed the rope and stepped off, that the rope wasn't in the canopy anymore because the aircraft had been slowly rising up.
Yeah,
so
okay.
Now the end of the rope is about 20 feet above the 150-foot canopy. You know, I'm standing on a skid when I first step off. I'm 400 feet in the air and step off with a rope, but I thought I can muscle this thing, not a big deal. Well, I found out very quickly it was a big deal. The rope was too slick. I couldn't hold on to it. It was sliding through my hands, and after about, you know, 15 or 20 feet, the white rope was red.
No.
Because it was just taking that all
quick.
The meat, everything off the inside of my hands.
Yeah,
blood
yeah.
was going everywhere. And the rope was just turning red as I was going. Then I'm picking up speed. I'm thinking, you know, this is not a good situation. You know, I'm not part of my plan. I'm moving a little faster than I had planned. But I think when I get to the bottom, because the McGuire rig is on there,
yeah.
if I really squeeze hard, I can probably, you know, manage to hold on to it and then figure out where do I go from here. So I did. I managed to stop my free fall when I got there, but I couldn't hold on to it long. And he was starting to move.
And you had to deal with the McGuire rig, too.
Yeah. So I'm just kind of holding on right above the McGuire rig, using that to keep my hand from sliding
you
know, through it. So I decided my only chance at this point was to, I was about to get center mass over one of the trees that I just turned loose. Flare, fall into the treetop and the canopy, and somewhere in the next 150 feet, I would manage to grab a hold of a limb.
150 feet?
Yeah, you know, I would, you know, be able to stop myself.
Yeah, from the canopy itself.
So that was a,
oh my God,
that was another, you know, issue with the plan. When you're going that fast and going through a tree and trying to grab a hold of a tree limb. It's a lot harder to do than you would think it would be.
Oh, I can't imagine. Well, how far between your McGuire rig and your 150 feet of canopy?
That was about 20 feet or so.
No.
So once I turned loose, you know, my stomach came up in my throat because I'm free falling now.
Yeah.
So I've got a lot of speed when I hit the canopy.
Oh.
And I'm grabbing. I can't hold on to anything. I'm bouncing off limbs.
You got a couple of broken ribs along the way.
I got broken ribs and, you know, skin up all over.
And you're bleeding like a dog.
And I have no skin on the inside of either one of my hands. You know, blood running all down. So I'm falling down through there. And finally, there was a big limb that I kind of hit and with my stomach, and I just folded around it. Not intentionally, it was just because I was going so fast. I just folded around that big limb, knocked the breath out of me. So once I could breathe again.
Was that when the magazine fell or your M16?
Well, I don't know. It somewhere as I was falling through and bouncing off limbs, the magazine came out of the weapon. So
now you're down to four magazines.
I'm down to four magazines.
And one round in the chamber.
One round in the chamber. So so I managed to get stopped. I had about 50 feet to go to get to the ground. So I climbed down, and when I got down to the base of the tree, I realized, missing a magazine. So I put a magazine in, I leaned up against a tree and took a few breaths and said, okay, I made it.
You're still alive.
Yeah, I'm still alive. But one of the things I did before I had, before I stepped off the skid, was I looked at the ground. And I created a mental map of what it looked like. So relative to the sun, here's where the first aircraft burned.
The H-34.
Here's where the Huey went down.
Right.
And up in this vicinity is where the team that they were going after.
On the other side of the H-34. Okay.
Appears to be up in that area. So I got a mental map so that once I got to the ground, I could figure out which way to go to find, the different crash sites. So, I got up off the ground and, a couple of deep breaths and looked around. And then you start to have these thoughts about, nobody knows I'm down here. That's on the ground.
Right.
So as far as everybody on the ground is concerned, when I start moving, I'm a bad guy.
Sure.
So that's not a good thought to have. But I start moving, and then I hear a twig break over to my left, and I look, and there's two NVA standing there with AK-47s, and they're looking at me, and I'm looking at them. And I thought, they have to go away. So I used to practice on the range all the time. Going down to the ground, falling to the ground, and emptying a 20-round magazine as I'd fall.
As you fell.
Yeah. And what I'd do on the range is I'd put five silhouettes out there relatively close together, and I'd practice hitting all five of them as I would go to the ground, firing on automatic. So if you hold a trigger down, it takes a little over about 1.4 seconds or so to put 20.
I thought it was 1.5 seconds.
Maybe 1.5. Okay. It was pretty close. But but you can put them out there. And, if you do that enough times, which I used to do every week, you can hit all five targets. But these two guys, they were close together. So I had to get them at the same, almost simultaneous, because if I shoot one, the other one's going to shoot me. So I've got to hit them both. Very good. But it's just two, and they're close together. So on the way down, I hosed the two of them down, and I could see them getting hit, and they were doing that little jerky dance that people do.
Their final dance.
Yeah, when they're getting hit multiple times. So, once I was on the ground, I listened. I didn't hear anything else. I heard some gunfire going on, so somebody was shooting back up away from me, and I figured that was in the vicinity of where the team was, so they must have made some contact up there or something. And so those two were down, so I got on my hands and knees, I crawled a little ways, and then crouched and started moving. And I wanted to go to where the team or the crew was that was still in the aircraft, because I needed to get them out before they
exploded. Yeah.
So I got close to the aircraft, and I got shot at. Bullet come flying by, and I knew it wasn't an M16. And I thought, that's a pistol. That's a .38 pistol. The pilot is shooting at me. He thinks I'm a bad guy. He's heard me coming through the bush. He thinks I'm a bad guy, and he's shooting at me with his pistol. And that fireball is going to set the whole thing off if we're not careful, or he's going to kill me. So anyway, I'm still moving around. I'm yelling at him and telling him, you know, I'm a good guy and all this kind of stuff. And he's not believing any of that. You know, but you have to understand, I mean, he went out. His aircraft gets shot down. He crashes down through the canopy. They're all traumatized. They're all trapped inside of an aircraft that's about to explode.
So he's still in it.
Well, that's, you know, that's kind of his mindset.
Sure.
And then he hears somebody coming. And he didn't know anybody else is on the ground but bad guys. So he starts shooting at me, and I tell him I'm a good guy. So I just kind of fumble around a little bit. And, you know, once he'd fired off his, you know, he just had a revolver. Once he fired off his six rounds, I just rushed him and said, I'm a good guy.
I'm on your side.
Yeah, I'm your rescue team. You know, I'm your rescue team. I'm here to get
I'm
you guys out.
I'm your one-man rescue team.
No, he said, where are the rest of you in? I said, it's just me. You know, it's just me. But trust me, I will get you out of here if you'll do what I tell you. You know, just don't shoot at me anymore. And I want to get you out of here. We got to get everybody out of the aircraft and away from it before it, you know, catches on fire and explodes or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So he agreed. So anyway, I started getting guys out, and I moved them to a location, and there was a group of rocks that I got them down in the rocks, so they had a little protection, and I, you know, gradually moved everybody
and
over.
And the door gunners were still strapped in? They didn't bounce out with the crash?
Nobody was. I mean, they were all still in the aircraft.
Wow.
But they were, I mean, they were banged up.
Yeah.
You know, from the, because it, to jump ahead a little bit, they were trying to lift a couple of guys out with a jungle penetrator. So if they were lifting them up, and that thing's like a big grappling hook.
Right, sure.
So what happened was that when the aircraft started taking hits and lost power, it started to go forward. When it started to go forward, that jungle penetrator hung on a big tree limb and stopped. And then with the force, the cable snapped. And when the cable snapped, I mean, it just fired that helicopter right down through the canopy like it was coming out of a slingshot.
Oh.
So it just launched them right into it and right on down. So they were all pretty shaken. And then you look up and there's a one-man rescue team here. You know, that didn't build a lot of confidence.
And you didn't bring any stretchers.
Yeah, no stretchers. And anyway, I get them all out, and then I wanted to go find the team, and I knew the general vicinity now because I could hear some gunfire.
Yeah.
So started to make my way up there, and you know, the shooting stopped, and then I heard some commotion going on, and I thought, well, maybe, you know, the survivors from the other aircraft, the one that burned, maybe they're there, and the NVA had captured him. But as I got closer, I could hear more American voices and discussion going on. So I yelled to them and told them, you know, I was the bright light team, and I was coming in not to shoot me, and I was holding a weapon in the air. So I got in there, and that's when
I'm your bright light team.
Yeah, here I am. I thought that's kind of cool. I'm a bright light team.
Yeah, you finally got your one man mission you wanted. Yeah, so, without planning it.
Yeah, so I go in there, and I find out that the pilot of the H-34 that had crashed and burned was an Air Force lieutenant colonel, and he was trying to tell the team what to do, and they were not happy about it. And I told him, I said, okay, I'm here now. I'm the ground commander. You're Air Force, but you're on the ground now, and
yeah.
I'm in charge. And he didn't like that at all. And so the team got upset. The team turned their weapons on him. And I told him, I said, they're going to shoot you, and your body will never be found. You need to agree to do what I say. So he decided, okay. He's looking down the muzzle with all those
car 15s. The better part of valor?
Yeah. So anyway, I got information from him, and he was telling me that there were two survivors, and he had put those on the jungle penetrator that had been dropped down. And as it was going up, the aircraft took hits, the cable broke. Those guys fell about 100 feet, and they hit right on a big rock that was down there. And they were both killed, when that happened. So I told him I was going to go down and get them. So I took some of the team members, and we went down and found the jungle penetrator, got the guys off of it.
And so part of the other team is still in contact with the NVA
The shooting has stopped.
Okay.
So they're out there somewhere, but the shooting has stopped. So I picked up, what appeared to be an American and put him over my shoulder. I was carrying him. A couple of other guys were carrying the Vietnamese. It turned out to be the co-pilot.
Yeah.
And we carried him back up the hill. Started to rain pretty hard. We got back to where the team was and inside the perimeter, and we put the guys down. And, the guy carried up, had on jungle fatigues, but, they were sterile. And I couldn't tell by looking at him who he was. So I asked the lieutenant colonel, and he told me, who it was. And I thought, holy cow, I know him.
No.
I mean, yesterday we were joking about something. I mean, I know him. And here I am carrying his body, up to the team.
No.
Because it's all burned up, all busted up. And but anyway.
Oh,
so,
my gosh.
So we got that. And then, I got the radio that the team had, so I called back and requested some things. I needed some demolitions. I needed to blow a big enough hole in the canopy. We could extract people out with the jungle penetrator without it hanging on anything. And we're going to need some, gunships to kind of keep the bad guys back while we did that. So Marine CH-46 came out and dropped about 50 pounds of C4, some blasting caps, and some deck cord. So I said, okay.
Was that enough?
I can make a hole with this, Just you guys get out of the way up there. Give me a few minutes, and I'll make a hole here. So I blew several trees down and made a pretty good size hole. I got the pilot crew and brought all of them over. So we started extracting people. Takes a good 2 minutes or so to go up the jungle penetrator.
Whoa.
And so you're hauling.
And that was from the Marine Corps Chinook?
Yeah.
Yeah. And where was the, was there your American counterpart from the team? Was he working with you?
Yeah,
or?
He was working with
me. Okay.
And so we were trying to get the wounded people, medevac crew out first because they were all busted up. And one of them had a broken femur, and I had splinted that. And that's very painful if you have a femur injury like that. So anyway, we got, the wounded guys up. We got the dead guys up. We got... started putting the team up.
That's quite a time frame for that Chinook to be harboring to do all that.
Yeah.
And
I don't think he went, he lasted long enough out there with us to get everybody up and get in there, and it's starting to really pour down the rain. And, so we get out, we go back, and get back over to CCN.
You got out too then?
Yeah, I went out with him.
Okay.
Myself and team leader came out together.
Okay.
So we're kind of facing each other, covering each other's back as we've been pulled up. But, it's twisting. But anyway, we got out and went back. I was told the colonel wanted to see me. I went to the mess hall. And I looked good. Muddy, soaking wet.
Bloody hands.
I am, blood still dripping off my hands, running off my elbows and stuff. And he was having a kind of a heated discussion with another colonel in there, an aviation guy. He told me, you did a good job, but you forgot somebody.
What? Yeah.
I got everybody that said it was there. I said, no, you didn't get the crew chief.
Get out.
Nobody told me about crew chief.
Even that worthless colonel.
Yeah, even the colonel did not tell me that the crew chief was missing.
Oh, so, my God.
And, you know, so I was told, you're going to have to go back out there at first light, you know, because it's
sure
getting late now. You got to go back out at first light and recover, you know, the crew chief's body and come back. And I was told that, you know, while you're out there, destroy, you know, the Huey, because it's still got its commo gear, all that stuff in it.
Whoa.
And, you know, destroy that. I said, okay, I can do that.
Because by the time you got out, it was near the end of the day?
Yeah.
After all that, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, so I had to go down to the dispensary and get the medics to fix my hands. So my hands are all bandaged up. And so anyway, we're supposed
it's hard,
to go
It's
out.
Hard to load magazines when your hands are bandaged up.
Yeah. And, you know, the CO there told me that, you know, yeah, you got to go back in the morning. So I got as many of the team members together as I could find because I had.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha, just mixed with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/SOG, S-O-G, for up to 44% off your regular price order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So, if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, go to roundhouseprovisions.com/SOG today. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Turn them all loose.
Sure.
So I grabbed them and we moved over to the isolation area and I was going to wait and go back out first light the next morning. And about 4 o'clock, you know, and Ben came to me and he said, weather number 10, no go. And, you know, wind was blowing about 30 miles an hour. It was pouring rain. And it did that for like 2 days. So we kept waiting on a break in the weather so we could go back out.
Sure.
So.
And you're in isolation, waiting in your hands.
Yeah, and, you know, can't do much at all with my hands. So, I had a little time, so I got gloves. So I put the, you know, leather gloves on my hands. And I cut the fingertips out so I could at least do something with them.
Yeah.
And I got a pair of... I don't know if they were nitrile or whatever, latex gloves probably, from the medics, because I thought I might be able to use those when I went back out. Then we waited, and the weather cleared, put the team on the aircraft, we flew back out, inserted up on top of the ridge, started working our way down to the crash site. And yeah, you know, because now they've had 2 days to go booby trap the area. They know we're coming back, because there's a whole Huey setting there, and there's a body there. They know we're coming back to do something. So they've had time to set up an ambush, do whatever they wanted to. And, you know, so we're working our way down the mountain. We stopped to take a little break, and we're sitting there resting and kind of looking around. And all of a sudden I hear this, and it's a pop top on a Coke can.
What?
And what are you doing? Give me that Coke. One of the indigenous guys took a Coke out there. And, you know, and this, you know, when the jungle's quiet and you pop a top on that thing, I mean, you can hear it for a long ways.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, if looks could have killed, he would have been killed by every member on the team at that point. So we would work our way. When we started getting close to the crash site, we knew we were getting close. After 2 days out there in the rain and the heat,
yeah.
Oh, the smell was, you know, strong.
Oh, yeah.
As we got up to the clearing where the crash site was, flies and everything was everywhere. And it was, you know, kind of an open area. So I sent two members all the way around just to see if they saw anybody, anything.
Yeah.
Before I walked out in the clearing to see if I could find the body. But as soon as I started out there, those flies started moving, and I could see this femur bone sticking up out of the wreckage.
The femur bone?
Yeah, because there was nothing beyond, you know, the knee.
Yeah.
So it's just a bone sticking up there. All the rain had washed the ashes and stuff away. You know, like the ashes had everything covered up when I was out there the first time.
That's why you didn't see him.
That's why I didn't see him. But this, when I went back this time, you know, the rain had washed the ashes away. So I didn't know if a sniper was going to try to get me while I was out there or not, but I managed to get him uncovered, and took a poncho, and I was going to set him up on a poncho, but as I lifted him up, he broke right at the lower back. It snapped, and when it did, it was one of those times where I had my mouth open. So all of the decayed garbage just hit me right in the face and in the mouth. And I was, oh. So I'm trying not to throw up. So, but we get him on the poncho and get him out of there. And, you know, they didn't want to carry him. They wanted to leave him. I told him, no, our mission was we got to take this guy with us. So I had my Coke guy, you carry him. So, a little reward for him.
Indeed.
Yeah. So, but then we had the other helicopter to deal with. So we moved over. We got the leftover demo, you know, from a couple of days ago. So I had 40 pounds of C4 and some deck cord and some blasting caps. So we went over to the helicopter, the Huey that was down in there. And, you know, we got a couple of stray rounds coming at us as we were moving over there to it. So I put the team up on top of the little ravine, up on the high ground. I stayed down with the helicopter, and I crawled inside with the C4. But I'm already starting to bleed. And I put on the latex gloves because I didn't want to touch the C4, you know, with my hands like this, because it was poisonous. It would have gone right in.
Yeah.
You know, so I had the latex gloves. And I start packing the C4 all around inside the helicopter there, around the, up in the cockpit. And some other guys, NVA, came up, and they started shooting at the helicopter because they knew somebody was in there, but they didn't know what I was doing in there, but they knew somebody was in there. So they started shooting. And so now I'm starting to feel like Houdini. Instead of swords coming through the box, I've got bullets coming through the box.
Yeah.
And, you know, occasionally one hits the C4, but it's not going to do anything to the C4. It's
right.
Not a hole in it. So I get it all packed up, and I put the deck cord in there, and now it's you know, decision time. I've got to put the blasting caps in the C4. If something hits the blasting cap, then we got a problem.
Different story.
So, yeah. So I put two caps in there on time fuses, ignited the time fuses, and you know they're starting to move on the helicopter now and shooting more at it. So I got out and I had to climb the bank right quick to get up to where the team was. And as I got up, I looked back and it looked like about five NVA ran right up to the helicopter. And we're all thinking, are you crazy? What do you think he was doing in there? But they don't know. They see smoke come out, but they don't think anything about it.
Sure.
You know, and we're up there saying, you know, we're going to have a big bang here in a few minutes. And, you know, so when it went off, really what saved the whole team is the helicopter was down in that ravine. Mm-hmm. So it was below ground level from where we were up on top there.
Yeah.
So when this gigantic explosion happened, most of it went up, or it went long ways down the ravine.
Ravine.
You know, so we got a lot of blast from it, but nothing like we would have gotten if it had been on level ground.
Oh, yeah.
But it was down in the hole, so it shot it up. So it rained helicopter parts and body parts. Those five guys or so that ran up to the helicopter got there just in time for the explosion. So it blew them apart, blew the helicopter all apart. But they had a bunch more friends coming. So all of a sudden we were in contact with about a platoon. We've got gunships coming out, and we're getting hammered with a RPD. And
ooh.
So I thought if I could position myself where I could tell my M79 guy where to shoot, we could take that thing out and we'd have a chance. As I started crawling on my belly like a reptile trying to get over into a little group of rocks on the edge where I could see from, I noticed they stopped shooting at me as I was crawling over there. They're still shooting at the team, but they're not shooting at me now. And I was wondering, why? Why did they stop shooting? So when I got to the edge of the bank and I looked over, here's a joker looking up at me with an AK. And so, you know, he's about like you and I.
Yeah.
And he's got an AK pointed at me. I've got a Car 15 pointed at him. He fires first. And, you know, the first one just barely goes across the top of my head. But, you know, the AK rose up, so the rest of the bullets, you know, went above me.
Yeah.
But mine went straight into his face. So just his head exploded, torso rolled back down. But that's why they had stopped shooting at me, is because they were letting him crawl up to get me. But anyway, once he was dealt with,
Did you keep your mouth closed that time?
No. I did get some blood. And, you know, there were several times where something like that happened, and for some reason my mouth was open. And, you know, you get hitting them with brain matter and, you know, blood or whatever in the mouth.
Yeah.
Next time I got to remember.
Those yellow fat cells.
Yeah. But anyway, we took out the machine gun. We had a battle for a while. They started reinforcing. So, you know, we had to leave. So it started raining hard, and we took the body, and we managed to go back up the mountain and get up on top of it where there was a defendable position up there in the rocks. And, you know, I was hoping when we got up there we'd be able to get extracted, but it was raining too hard, the weather was coming in, so we had to stay up there a couple of days before we could get out. We were just going in on the bright light. We were going to be in there a few hours. So we took one meal. You know, so we spent 2 days up there on top of the mountain. They were not happy about not having, you know, more food.
Yeah.
But, you know, eventually the weather broke and we got out. And then I get back And, you know, that same aviation colonel is going bananas. You know, you blew up my helicopter. You told me to do that.
Yeah.
I said, destroy it. He said, I didn't mean blow it up. I said, my definition of destroy is I blow things up, you know, and it's in little pieces all over the place.
Do you know my code name? My code name is Dynamite.
Yeah. There's a reason they call me that. I blew things up. So, yeah, it was interesting. But, you know, the hand issue, it took a while. The good thing about your hands and your feet, and most people don't think about this, but you have different kind of skin on your hands and your feet because they're like working surfaces. They're designed for the skin to be worn off.
Right.
As you do things, like if you get a big blister on your hand, I mean, in a few days, the skin's back and everything's fine.
Sure.
And your feet are the same way. You know, so the skin's starting to grow back on my hands.
Yeah.
But then I go out on another mission or do something, and I'm, you know, there's crusting over, but now when I start using my hands, then I start bleeding and blood's running out all over the place. So, you know, but I would coat them with this ointment that the medics gave me and wear gloves and different things and holy cow. Yeah. It was, you know, just another day at SOC.
Indeed.
You need to use your hands? Sorry about that. I'm gonna take all the skin off of it, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever. Or I'm gonna, you know, break some ribs or do something.
Sure.
But it gave me an opportunity to play with that particular team a little more, learn the players, for them to learn, do not carry a carbonated drink out with the team and pop the top on it. Oh.
Well, you had one other mission that kind of stands out. I like to change gears on that. As we knew that SOG was compromised. And I think that the one mission where you had the penultimate compromise clarification in terms of teams, you were on the ground in a target in Laos. You had the encrypted radio with you and an encryption device. So all communications were encrypted. So on this mission, you're on the ground, and up on the radio comes a woman's voice, and then they play a funeral dirge first, which you knew from your childhood days of going to funerals. You knew what a funeral dirge was, the music. And then at some point, she says to you, Lieutenant Dick Thompson, and the only person, your cousin and Eldon Bargewell, were the only people in, I always called you Henry, that knew your nickname, Dick. And she goes, Lieutenant Dick Thompson, then goes through the names of your team, and then she said to you, we're going to destroy your team today.
Yeah. Today is the day you died. Everybody died.
Today is the day you died.
So she was reading our obituary to us that we had died that day. It was interesting because...
It was interesting, yes, because...
We had started to go on this mission 8 days before, and while we're at the launch site getting ready to launch, another team had a prayer fire emergency. They changed us to a bright light team and sent us out to try to recover the other team.
Right.
So it ended up we had to wait 8 days to... before we could go on their original mission of trying to find some POWs that were being moved north into North Vietnam.
They had to wait 8 days for that mission?
Had to wait 8 days before we could get back out there. We go out, and just to add a little bit to it, we go out and something just doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
I felt like, and this is a heavy team. There's 22 of us.
Really?
And Captain Bruce Lombard is his team and my team. We put them together. Because they're just going to try to recover all these PWs and everything. And we were armed to the teeth. And so we go out, and, you know, Bruce and I talked a couple of times when we did, you know, some security halts, and something's just not right out here. And
that sixth set was kicking in.
And so we're on a ridge line, really steep on each side, 50 feet or so across, and we've set up an RON right there. And, you know, it has rained, and I'm leaning against a tree. You know, I've still got the rucksack on. I'm leaning against it, car 15, you know, across my lap like normal. And, you know, I'm about to go to sleep. My eyes are starting to roll back in my head. And I hear a twig break. You know, so my eyes come open and I think I heard a twig.
Yeah.
It sounded like it was in front of me. And then I heard another twig. And I thought, well, somebody has gotten inside our perimeter. How could somebody have walked into our perimeter? Because, you know, we're pretty close together all the way around.
And you're on a ridge line.
Even though there's only 22 of us. I mean, we're close. But somebody has walked inside the perimeter. And, you know, you can't see your hand in front of your face. It's so dark.
Yeah.
And this guy is, I can tell, he's coming right at me. He's going to step on me. He doesn't know I'm here, and he's going to step on me. And when he steps on me, he'll know I'm here, and he's going to open fire. And when he does, you know, everybody's going to open. Whoever's with him is going to open fire. And I'm starting now to use all the sensory data I can get. So even though I can't literally see him, I can still see an outline of where he is.
Yeah.
And he's coming, he's getting closer. I can hear him breathing because he's getting scared. And when you get scared, you kind of grunt a little bit when you breathe, and you breathe harder.
Yeah.
I can smell the fear sweat because he knows he's inside that perimeter and something's about to happen. And he's coming toward me. I can hear his heart starting to beat.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm there and I slowly go to full auto with a selector switch. He can't hear it. And I'm thinking, well, you know, if I open fire, it's going to light me up like a neon sign. I'll take him out, but his buddies are going to take me out. So shooting's not good. It just happened to the way I'm sitting on my knife. And if I try to get my K-bar out, he's going to hear it. And I thought, what am I going to do? And I decided when he gets close enough, I'm going to reach out and grab him, grab a hold of whatever I can get a hold of. I'm going to take the car 15. I'm going to jam it in the side of his head as I pull him down and pull him down to the ground. If he makes a sound, if he fires his weapon or he makes a sound, I'm going to put a 4 or 5 round burst in his head and then deal with his friends. So he's getting closer and closer. And finally, you know, he's here. And I reach up, and I grab him, I jerked him, he tripped over my feet as he's coming down. I jam the muzzle into the side of his head, pull him down, his face is in the mud. So I've got him down like that, and I'm thinking, well, now what am I going to do with him? I mean, it scared him so bad that when I grabbed, he couldn't even gasp. He didn't make a sound, and boom, he's right face down in the mud.
Yeah.
And it's just silence, and then I hear, very in a whispered voice, lights, lights. And I thought, what? He's saying English words, lights. And he said it a couple more times. And then I thought, we have a Vietnamese captain with us out here. This guy was supposed to take over Bruce's team and make it be an all
VN.
Yeah.
No.
So he, you know, this is the first time. So he's forgotten the rules that I've told him. Nobody moves once we go down for an RON. Nobody gets up and moves. So, and here he is, and he's saying, lights, lights. And so I start looking around, and I look kind of back up toward the top of the mountain, you know, what little I could see. There's a trail of lights moving down the mountain. And I figured 200 or so lights.
Whoa.
with people in between them.
And I know
all,
that feeling.
And they're all coming down short us. And then I look the other way, look down the mountain, and that number of lights are coming up the mountain toward us. So you've got these two groups of people moving directly toward us. We're going to be right in the center when they meet. And that's what he was trying to tell me. And then Schaefer, who was on American on my team, he had the radio, and he said, "Sir, you got to hear this." So, okay. So I take the handset and get my call sign, and they say, you know, in the clear, you guys are now prayer fire emergency. Saigon was telling me I'm a prayer fire emergency because they had data.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were monitoring the transmissions with the NVA, and they knew they were coming closing in on us to get us. And so they tell us we were prayer fire emergency. And I thought, oh, man. So I get Bruce and the other Americans together, and I said, this is what's happening. You know, we got about 400 coming from that way and about 400 coming from this way. We've been declared a prairie fire emergency. The weather's bad. No gunships, nothing available. You know, so that's what's going on. And that's when, you know, Schaefer does his thing again and says, sir, you got to hear this. WTF, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
What do I have to hear now? And that's when I... You know, the most secure radio the Army has, the new one, that requires a code to be set in it, a 21
prongs
code gun,
yeah,
that you have to use every day, as well as setting the right frequency to it. And all of a sudden, I hear this funeral music, and I hear the woman talking that you were mentioning earlier. She's talking to us on another radio. Nobody's supposed to have this but us. And all of a sudden, she's talking and reading off her name, you know, trying to get in my head by calling me Dick when nobody knew that. And, you know, and then telling us we all died that day, and playing the funeral music in the background. And Saigon's monitoring all of this, and they know what's going on.
Oh.
And, you know, so things got a little tense for a few minutes. So... you know, Covey came back out, and I talked to Covey. And
said, at night.
So I need some options. I know you can't bring in the gunships. I mean, you can't bring in air support like that to help us. We have nowhere to go. We can't go anywhere.
Right.
And they're closing in on us. And I guess the forward air controller said, maybe you could use combat sky spots.
Ooh.
And I said, well, educate me a little bit. What are we talking about here?
Oh.
Well, we're going to have an F-4 come by, and he's going to drop a bomb. You're going to give us a set of grid coordinates 3,000 meters away. He's going to come by and drop a bomb based on radar and see if he can hit, you know, the grid that you give us. And then we'll start working the bombs down the ridge towards you.
No.
So he comes by, drops a bomb, and it hits about 1,500 meters from us. You know, and that, you know, raised our arousal a little. He's 1,500 meters off with it. The accuracy is not very good.
Yeah, yeah.
But
wow.
Anyway, so we started working that, and I worked it down so it was hitting the guys up above us. I finally got it on them, and then we started working below. And so... Anyway, it kept going, you know, all night. We had our claymores out. We had the 7 and the 3. You know, Bruce had them set up on the upper side. I had them on the downside.
Yeah.
We did all of that. Eventually, you know, they were starting to overrun us, so I called for the CBU. They put the cluster bomb units right on top of us. We had 7 of them that didn't go off inside our perimeter.
In your perimeter.
And so we survived that. We start to go down the hill, and as soon as we start moving toward the LZ, we discover there's an ambush set up there waiting on us. You know, so we just took my team and we just assaulted the ambush. And we had two machine guns with us. So we hosed those jokers down. We get on down, finally get to the LZ. And the port man stops, and I what's up? He says, bomb. I said, what do you mean, bomb? He says, bomb. And he points to the LZ. And I'm looking, and there's a tail fin of a 500-pound bomb sticking up out of the mud on the LZ. The one of the bombs that they dropped the night, last night, we didn't hear it go off. Now I know where it is. It's in the LZ.
Oh, my God.
So, we called Covey and said, you got to tell everybody, don't shoot anything onto that LZ because it'll take out all of us if that thing goes off. So it was just one thing after another. And finally, we're about to get out and I'm bringing the helicopters in. And we're down to the last aircraft. And I've got Craig Stevenson is, with an M60, and I got him there putting out fire on the tree line while we're trying to get the rest of the guys on.
Yeah.
And that's when I heard the voice that said, drop. And I just dropped to my knees, and when I did, whoom, about a 10-round burst of RPD fire, cut a hole, about an 8-inch hole in the side of the helicopter where my head had been, a couple seconds before. And
so God spoke to you.
Yeah. I mean, that's the only thing I could say. Everything went totally silent and then, drop. And I dropped, I don't know if because I was told to drop or because it scared me so bad my knees buckled. But, I went down. They hit it. And I got back up and we finally got the last few of us on the aircraft and took off. So it was an interesting few days.
Well, it's just another day in
summer. Yeah, it's just another. And when we got back, we got off the aircraft, and that's what Bruce used to say that all the time. He just looked at me, and he had this big grin he always had on his face, and he said, Henry, it was just another day in summer.
Right. Well, I think that we'll wrap it up at this point, because that is a story that's a perfect ending. To think that you would get through all of that, and at the end, the Lord or somebody spoke to you, duck.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Drop.
Down. Drop.
Yeah.
That's the word. Okay. Well, on that thought, sir, thank you for going out of your way to come back to visit us again. We appreciate it. And again, as always, we thank Jocko Willink Productions for making SOGcast broadcasts available. We thank you. As always, we thank our service members that are out there today protecting our country, as well as first responders, the Border Patrol, law enforcement, during these difficult times. Continue to pray for our country. God bless America.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.